You're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, a show about... Wait, repartee? Is that a word? Is that what I was supposed to say? The heck is repartee?
Well, Mr. Announcer Guy, it means conversation characterized by quick, witty comments.
All right, you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Whatever. Hosted by Doug Paget, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
Hey, and welcome in to the repartee. Man, Hunter, that announcer guy's got to learn what repartee means. We got to teach him that at some point.
Yeah, we got to teach that announcer guy.
Yeah, I know, exactly. He's a real character, isn't he?
Wise guy.
He is a kind of a wise guy there. Whatever. I'll say whatever to our name. Anyways, it is Brett and Hunter here on your Tuesday afternoon. Glad to have you with us on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Although, if you've been listening since 3 p.m. This is hour two, technically, of the repartee, maybe since, we were filling in for Matt McNeil during the last hour as well, but glad to have you along with us here. As during this hour, we're going to focus more on some local and Minnesota issues, but we'll also still sprinkle in some national topics as well, including some national topics with our upcoming guest in just a few moments. It is David Schultz. He is a political science professor over at Hamline University here in the Twin Cities, and he joins us now on the program to talk both about some local and national issues dealing with the state legislator here in Minnesota, then also what's happening with the government shutdown on the national scale as well. Hey, Professor David Schultz, how are you doing today? Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well today. How about you?
Hey, doing great over here. Glad you could join us because it's been a while since we've had you here on AM 950, and definitely love getting your insight into all sorts of issues that are taking place both locally and nationally. And one of the first ones I want to talk about is, well, the state legislature that, of course, got in session a few weeks ago, and we, of course, have a much different look. We have a new governor with Tim Walz in the governor's mansion. We also have a fairly large majority for the DFL in the state house, but we still have a GOP-controlled Senate. And what especially happened after 2018 was that we've really seen the GOP and the Senate divided along geographic lines, where, of course, DFLers predominantly are in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and Republicans are predominantly now in outstate Minnesota. But there are still some rural DFLers and still some suburban Republicans. So, Professor Schultz, I want to talk to you about this dynamic, because does this kind of give rural DFLers and now suburban Republicans outsized powers to really be deciding votes on different issues that could come before the Minnesota legislator?
Yes, but more importantly, I think at this point, the real play is with the Republican suburban legislators, because what they do and whether they're going to break ranks is going to determine how successful Governor Walz and the House DFL is in terms of moving their agenda. As we know right now, the Republicans hold a 34th, basically all 30, well, it's 34-33, but now it's a 34-32 with Lowery taking a job with the Walz administration. The DFL doesn't have a majority there, and if they want to pass any of their and assuming, by the way, they pick up that seat, so it's still 34-33.
Right.
The Democrats have to pick up at least one Republican vote, if not more, to be able to move anything they want to move through the legislature. And that's going to be really difficult. So the question becomes, to what extent are the Democrats able to move any Republican legislators? And that's why I say that maybe there's a handful of suburban Republicans in the Senate that really do control the balance of power in terms of what could happen for the Democrats.
Well, I have another question about the state Senate, because I've always found this interesting in Minnesota is that, of course, like most states, our state senators don't serve just two-year terms. They either serve, depending on your state, four, or I think there even are some that have six-year terms. But here in Minnesota, our elections for state senators are kind of interesting because they're all up at one time, mm-hmm. which in this decade was 2012 and 2016. They weren't up in 2014 and 2018, which is interesting to me, because had they been up for election, even half the chamber, like some states do, I imagine we probably would have had a DFL-controlled Senate here in the state. And conversely, in 2014, I imagine we probably would have had that Senate flip over to Republican control. Is there any reason why in the Minnesota Constitution we don't stagger our elections for state senators like other states do? And has there ever been any thoughts of trying to move that where we do stagger our state Senate elections?
Well, first off, why the framers originally did it becomes a really great question, you know, in terms of why they set that up. And when I've read through the original debates for writing the Minnesota Constitution, they thought that 4 years would provide stability, although not having the staggered terms, I don't know how, in fact, that really promotes stability, because what it really sets up the potential for is, under the wrong scenario, really abrupt or significant shift in composition of the Senate. So exactly whether or not what the framers were thinking, and then B, whether it's a good idea, is a different question, obviously. But yes, there's been some efforts in the past to try to stagger the terms, but there's really been no ability to move the Constitution to be able to change to do that, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of public either interest or even thought about that matter. Although I think the case could be made to say that maybe we do have a staggering. Half of the Senate comes up every 2 years, which, you know, given a four-year term, it would make sense. And going back to your original premise here, had we that kind of staggering, it's pretty probable that the Democrats might have been able to pick up the Senate this past year, and therefore they would have a unified government to do what they want.
Well, speaking of what happened in 2018, and by the way, just going back to that, I've just always found that interesting because I don't know of many other states that don't have staggered elections for their state senators. I know Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, also has staggered terms for their elected state senators. But going back to someone who was elected in 2018, that, of course, is Governor Tim Walz. And he's kind of set out olive branches to different Republicans, saying he wants to work with them on different issues and he wants to be someone who's more of a uniter than a divider. And that's kind of different than Mark Dayton, when a lot of Republicans said he was very difficult to work with. They didn't like Mark Dayton, and it really turned into a toxic relationship, especially during Governor Dayton's second term in office. Do you expect any differences with how Tim Walz might work with Republicans as opposed to Mark Dayton?
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Tim Walz has had to always came from a swing district, congressional district, representing a more rural area. He certainly didn't have a large winning majorities behind him, always relatively close elections. And given that background, you know, he may be more attentive to rural types of issues and more attentive to being able to work across party lines than I think Mark Dayton was. I mean, Mark Dayton was in many ways a quintessential, urban Twin Cities governor. And as you pointed out, especially those last 2 years, line item vetoing out the legislature's funding and then the big veto of the omnibus bill last year, I mean, his relationship with the Republicans was not very good. Walz, I think, has the potential of being able to work with the Republicans better, but I think one of the challenges is going to be that his instincts in terms of where he wants to go politically versus perhaps where the Democratic legislature may want to go, which has, I think, fairly liberal new members, versus where the Republicans are, may be very disparate. And so the question becomes, are there certain things upon which they can find common policy ground to work with? And that, I think, is going to be the challenge right off the bat. Can they set a tone very quickly and early on in the session to do that? Because this is going to be hard no matter what situation it is, because, again, of this, as you pointed out in the opening here, of the intensity of the polarization that we see in nationally and in Minnesota, of course.
And one of the issues both sides do seem to agree on is that we need more infrastructure spending here in the state. But, of course, the holdup is, how do we get that extra infrastructure spending? Governor Walz, of course, who just took office a few weeks ago, has come out in favor of raising Minnesota's gas tax. But Republicans have been more hesitant on this issue. The gas tax, of course, has not been raised here in Minnesota in several years. I think it was back during the early 2000s, or was it the mid-2000s last time we raised it. But Professor Schultz, do you think there's any possible movement we could get on raising the gas tax during the upcoming session?
That's going to be a very hard one to do, and the question becomes, what does the governor, or what do the governor and the Democrats have to offer the Republicans? Again, what you're going to probably see is some defections by the Democrats on this issue. So in terms of thinking in the Senate, it's just picking up one or two Republicans. That may not be the case. There may be two or three Democrats who have to vote against it because of their rural interests, and that means potentially you may be looking at about, let's say, 3 to 4, maybe 5 Republicans who have to break party ranks. So the question becomes, what is it the Democrats, what is it Waltz can offer? Now, I know he's talking about more investment in rural Minnesota, infrastructure, broadband, and so forth. That may be enough. But one of the lessons I think that Republicans learned from several years ago when several of them voted for the gas tax increase last time is that they were essentially expelled from the Republican Party. And what I mean by expelled, either shunned, lost in primaries, or otherwise were out of office very quickly afterwards. And I think that's a lesson that Republicans are not going to forget. So this becomes a challenge. Now, there are other potential sources of funding, and I wrote about this recently, is that you're going to see, I think, Republicans maybe saying that, well, we have a surplus, go for that, possibly, although that surplus is really more illusionary than we think, and then think about at least 2 or 3 possible revenue streams that are new in Minnesota that may be thrown in terms of sources of revenue. For example, there is the talk about the legalization and the commercial sale of marijuana. And if you follow a Colorado model, there may be sources of revenue there that the state could use for infrastructure. Second, the Supreme Court issued a decision last June that now allows states to do legalized sports gambling. Would Minnesota maybe say, we're going to legalize sports gambling as a way of funding it? And then three, a Supreme Court decision also now allows for the state to require internet businesses to collect sales taxes. So if we just look at those three sources there, I can see Republicans saying that, well, we're not going to go along with a gas tax, but we might be willing to go along with some kind of way of financing infrastructure by looking at one or more of those revenue streams. And that may be the way that the Democrats get something like the legalization of marijuana, by tying it into some kind of taxes or fees that then go into something else.
Yeah, and going back to these taxes and fees, of course, most DFLers have come out in favor of marijuana legalization, but you were bringing up some other possible revenue sources as well. Would Democrats also go along with these? Because as you said, some of these proposals you were talking about could be ways to give olive branches to Republicans. But on the other side, would DFLers go along with them as well, or are they more set on trying to raise that gas tax as their source of revenue?
Right now, I think they're more set on raising that as a source of revenue, that is the gas tax, and I don't even know if they've even thought the next step in terms of these other sources of revenue that they that might be possibilities out there. On top of which, I think one of the other complications is the fact that while we saw last week the Democrats move in terms of introducing marijuana bills, and we saw some heated exchanges at the Capitol between different groups all about legalization or not, I think one of the challenges for Democrats in Minnesota is whether or not this is an issue that plays well in the suburbs. And what I mean by that is that it was suburban female voters who essentially drove Democrats to control the U.S. House and the Minnesota House of Representatives. And what I wonder is whether or not movement right up front at all on marijuana makes sense in terms of, is this sort of one of the first issues they really want to be pushing, or where does it fit into a broader agenda for the Democrats? I don't know what that answer is, but my gut instinct tells me that there may be many suburban Democrats who are hesitant to vote for legalization of marijuana simply because it may not play in their local districts.
Yeah, absolutely, when they face re-election in 2020. And speaking of 2020, at least statewide, we only have one statewide election coming up in 2020, and that is Tina Smith's Senate seat, which will be up for a re-election, even though she just had a special election in 2018. Well, we know Tina Smith very likely to be the DFL nominee unless she faces some sorts of well-funded challenger. I want to go to the Republican side because Hunter, my co-host, and I have been kind of talking over the past few months and trying to figure out who exactly is on the Republican bench that they could run in 2020 on a statewide basis? We were kind of wondering, could they go back to the route of going through looking at business leaders, or have they kind of soured on that from the experience they've had with Donald Trump and even looking back in 2014, Mike McFadden, who lost in what was a very Republican cycle? What are your thoughts on who Republicans could run statewide in 2020?
Well, this becomes the challenge because we're now looking at the fact that Tim Pawlenty winning his second term as governor 8 years ago now, 8 years ago is the last Republican, actually 12 years ago, I correct myself, 12 years ago is the last Republican to win statewide office in Minnesota. And the question becomes, are any people coming up through the Republican ranks who really have the legs to run a statewide campaign in terms of name recognition and so forth? And if we look at people who are in the legislature, I'm not sure there's anybody. Now we think about, can we really sort of draw upon people who are business leaders? And I think this is a real problem for Republicans right now, is that if I can use a sports analogy here, I don't think they have a varsity team to run at the state level right now. And this is going to be a challenge for them in 2 years, that they really aren't grooming or don't have anybody groomed to really run for any type of state-level position, let alone taking a shot at Tina Smith.
Yeah, and I want to switch gears now and talk about one national issue that I know you've been blogging about. And by the way, this is David Schultz, a Hamline University professor, and you can find his blog at Schultz's Take. Just Google that, and it should pop up right away. And you've been talking about Donald Trump possibly declaring a national emergency to get his border wall built. And there, of course, are lots of constitutional implications if he were to do this. Can you go through some of those on would it actually be constitutional for Donald Trump to declare a national emergency and build that border wall to try to end the government shutdown?
Yeah, I don't think he can do it. And I did a piece recently all about this in terms of the legal issues that appeared in Counterpunch. And we start with the first notion that says that the government, and partly why we have a shutdown right now, is that the government can't spend money unless it has the legal authority to do so. And that's important because once Congress allocates it and the president signs off on it, that money must be spent the way it's supposed to be spent. Mm-hmm. And that becomes the starting point right off the bat, is that there's no authority, even under the National Emergencies Act, that suggests that that act gives the president the authority to set aside spending priorities or allocations of resources already determined by Congress. So that becomes the first issue. Second, in 1974, there was the Congressional Budget Act, which was passed, which places limits on the ability of presidents to be able to divert resources beyond what Congress has authorized. That becomes another issue. Third, we can look at is that, again, the text of the National Emergencies Act actually faces a lot of problems. Nowhere in the act does it actually define what an emergency is, and I could see the courts potentially saying that if the president were to invoke a national emergency and try to build a wall on his own, the decision of what constitutes an emergency is so vague that it might violate the Constitution for its vagueness. So I think there's a variety of problems, on top of which I think there's a precedent here. Let us say Trump were to do this. What would then to prevent, and then he basically takes his resources and puts it into building the wall. What's to prevent, let's say, the next Democratic president from declaring a national emergency and saying, we need to divert resources to pay for what? Global warming, to pay for alleviating poverty, whatever it may be. I don't think you're going to see the courts give the president that kind of a leeway to decide whatever it is to be an emergency. There's a famous Supreme Court case in the 1950s, Youngstown versus Sawyer, where in the middle of the Korean War, Harry Truman wanted to declare an emergency, nationalize the steel mills to prevent a labor strike that would have interrupted steel production for the war. The Supreme Court rejected his ability to do that. My point being is that there's an outer limit regarding what a president can do in an emergency, and I think part of the reason why the president hasn't actually declared national emergency is the fact that someone is telling him, you're going to probably lose on this one if you do.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And I think there's definitely a fear among Republicans that, yeah, a Democratic president could come in and do the same thing and maybe declare a national emergency on climate change or another issue. So I got one final question regarding the government shutdown and Donald Trump's proposed border wall. We just saw earlier today how Colin Peterson just came out and told The Hill that he thinks we should give Trump the money he needs for the border wall. And I want to talk about some other Democrats who possibly could be facing some pressure to maybe compromise with Donald Trump. And that's Angie Craig and Dean Phillips here in Minnesota. I don't think they'll obviously go quite as far as what Colin Peterson did today. But do you think Phillips or Craig will feel any pressure to eventually try to work out a deal with Donald Trump? I mean, we already saw Dean Phillips a few days ago. He's part of that Problem Solvers Caucus, actually meet with Donald Trump. Do you think there could be any pressure on reps like Phillips or Craig, who are newly elected and represent these suburban areas that used to be having Republicans as their reps?
Possibly, but I also think there's a fear for them that if they do vote for the border wall, that both of them will face intense primaries in 2 years, because I think this has become a defining issue for Democrats, is that I could see significant Democratic Party support being withdrawn from them and primaries resulting as if they were to come out and support the border wall. I find it unlikely they would do it, and if they did, probably political suicide.
Yeah, I think you might be right on that one. It'll be interesting to see what some of the fallout is with Colin Peterson, although he, of course, does represent a more conservative area of the state. That's David Schultz, Hamline University professor. I'm getting some good insight from him here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Hey, Professor Schultz, thanks so much for joining us on the program today. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Let's make it sooner as opposed to later.
Absolutely. I agree with that. We'll have to get you on definitely at some point here in the near future. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a short break and have some other thoughts on some local issues. Then coming up around 4:35, we'll speak with Aaron Brown of Minnesota Brown about this special election that's taking place in Senate District 11 here in the state of Minnesota. That's on the way next on AM 950.
Hello, this is Brett's grandmother. You are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Minnesota's very best appliance shoppers choose Warner Stellion, home of the lowest price guarantee and trusted free services. Warner Stellion's in-store specialists will help you choose what's best for you. If it's worth considering, Warner Stellion has it. And now through the 23rd, we guarantee our price is lowest. Save more with our trusted free delivery, basic installation, haul away, and no interest financing. Don't wait. Get in on special appliance savings now through January 23rd from Minnesota's own Warner Stellion.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Hi, this is Chad Larson, owner of AM 950. You are listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Brett and Hunter in on the Repartee today. A kind of rhymes. Repartee today. I might have to use that more often, but glad you're with us here on your Tuesday afternoon. A double dose of Hunter and myself, as we were also filling in for Matt McNeil during the 3 o'clock hour. So something I wanted to bring up about Donald Trump possibly declaring a national emergency to build his border wall. I actually just got into watching the show on Netflix called House of Cards. And it's just weird, weird timing that this happened to me. But just about the time that the idea was being floated that Donald Trump wanted to declare a national emergency to build his border wall, well, it's also, hopefully I'm not spoiling this for anyone, the same time in that series where President Frank Underwood was also declaring a national emergency to get his program built called America Works. So I just found that kind of weird that about that same time that President Trump was trying to get emergency or trying or maybe declaring a national emergency to build his border wall was the same time I was in that episode in House and Cards where they did that very same thing, which by the way took place in 2015 when they made that episode. So Hunter, you ever seen that show before, House of Cards, or heard about it?
Yeah,
so you might know what I'm talking about, where Underwood, who, by the way, is a Democrat but a very evil guy, actually does this exact thing where he raids the FEMA fund to get his America Works program implemented. And I just found that weird that exactly when I was watching that episode was the time that Donald Trump was considering declaring that national emergency. So I don't know, something weird going on with the stars maybe aligning there. One more national thing I wanted to talk about, and that is Joni Ernst. She is the Iowa senator who was made famous in 2014 for having an ad for her campaign where she was castrating a pig. Well, apparently she's saying that Donald Trump offered her to be the vice president in 2016, and she said no. Ooh, how about that? What about that ticket right there? Donald Trump and Joni Ernst.
Really? That really happened?
That's what she's claiming in this interview with City View, which is a Des Moines alternative newspaper.
Huh.
I'm trying to think here. Who would be less scary as a vice president, Mike Pence or Joni Ernst? Because, I mean, Mike Pence is far, far to the right. Not saying Joni Ernst necessarily is, but he at least has some experience in how to run the government, where Joni Ernst kind of came out of nowhere in 2014. But, boy, if he was offering a senator who had only been in office for 2 years the vice presidency, who else was he offering that VP spot to as well?
I know, that would be
interesting. I still think he was going to offer it to Vince McMahon if no one else came through.
Oh, my God. That's not even real life anymore.
No, I think there was a real chance if everyone said no, he would eventually turn to old Vinnie Mac.
Yeah, I know, it's sad. It is real life, but it just doesn't seem like it could ever be. And this is actual reality going on right now.
Speaking of reality, let's go to one of our realest callers on the phone lines. That's the lamest thing I've ever said. Let's go to Gary in Minneapolis. Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I never get over
how the American people keep voting to give all the wealth to the privileged few on the top. You know, these Republicans, ever since Reagan, I can remember, the national debt was $600 billion. It wasn't a problem. They wanted a little debt, you know, and he said, there'll be a balanced budget by 1984. He wiggled his index finger. He wiggled it. He said, they'll love murder and deal with kidnappers and murders. Okay, he left us him and the first Bush left us with a $5 trillion debt. And so when are these people going to wake up? And look at Obama. He had to spend money to save us from a depression. And he inherited that big debt that the second Bush blew all the money that Clinton left him, that big surplus. And they bankrupt the country. And then who's going to pay for those tax cuts to the rich? Trillions of dollars of tax. We are. The middle class keeps losing all its wealth to the rich. It's a reverse Robin Hood, like Jesse Jackson used to say. And one of these dummies going to wake up. They're so worried about the minorities and the immigrants. Well, we can't let them catch up to us. They vote against them instead of these fat cats on top who are robbing the country blind.
Hey, thanks so much for the call, Gary. Man, I love Gary's energy. Hey, Hunter, you think he ever uses hand signals or is waving his arms when he's talking?
Oh, yeah.
I think he is. Yeah, I love Gary and his energy.
Oh, me too.
Hey, we got time for one more call because I do have a guest coming up here at the bottom of the hour, actually about 4:40 or so. We already are past the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Bill in St. Paul as he wants to actually disagree with Professor David Schultz. All right, Bill, what do you think?
With some due respect to Schultz, I think he's full of baloney. I've heard him on Almanac and this and that. But it's really a matter of what's not being talked about. That includes him. We're not going to hear it on the corporate media. It's the fact that the U.S. hegemony, 800 military bases around the world, propping up dictators, starting wars. We are the ones creating refugees. And if we can stop that, we won't have to worry about a wall. I mean, it's rubbish anyways. And I would guess, since you call yourselves progressives, you're the one that should be talking about that. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of unmitigated gall to have the word progressive in front of your station. I'm done. Your turn. I'll take my answer off the air.
Hey, thanks so much, Bill. Unfortunately, I am right up against the break because we got to get Aaron Brown on, but I definitely love getting your perspective on that, and I like your term rubbish when it comes to building that border wall. 952-946-6205. Might have some time for some callers towards the end of the hour, but up next, we're going to speak with Aaron Brown of Minnesota Brown about this special election in the state Senate. The DFL is having their primary today, then the general election is in 2 weeks. We're going to get filled in from Aaron Brown up next here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Candy from Green Tea Conversations, Sunday at 10 a.m., and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Reportage.
Standard Heating is celebrating 89 years in business this January, but you get all the gifts, like saving $1,900 on a high-efficiency furnace and AC or boiler. In addition to providing year-round comfort for your family, you'll also enjoy lower energy bills. That's certainly worth celebrating. Learn how you can save $1,900 on your new furnace and AC or boiler, and other anniversary savings at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
Hi, this is Laura, and I want to tell you about my family's favorite thing. It's our wood stove. We bought it about 14 years ago from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. And see, the wood stove has actually paid for itself because we can keep the main area that we live in toasty warm with this great moist heat. But more important than saving money, it has actually improved our lives. Having a fire simplifies life. It provides comfort. It sort of takes the chill out of winter.
I'm Peter Solak. In 1977, I started Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, and I experienced the simple joy of warming myself by a fire. I also realized that the place and the way we embrace fire has evolved in a diversity of forms and styles. So at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we have brought together the widest selection of our fireplace products and technical knowledge in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to use our knowledge to help you choose the design and function that is right for you and your home.
Visit Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces today and find the right fire for you.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Tonight, scattered flurries, cloudy with a low around 8. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 19. And Thursday, mostly sunny and cold with the temperature falling to negative 2. Moe's Tax Service has been working for you, not the IRS, since 1971. Located in Highland Park in St. Paul. Schedule an appointment today by calling 612-721-2026 or visit moestax.com. That's Moe's Tax Service, MOH STAX.com.
This is Nick Schrock with Nick Slavic Painting and Restoration, and I'm painting at AM 950 today, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
I love that pronunciation, Repartee. And by the way, they've done a great job painting here at AM 950. Our building was in desperate need of a new paint job, and they are doing a good job providing that over at Nick Slavic Painting. Love that they came on and voiced something as well. The only problem I got is that we are getting these paint fumes throughout the building, and those can be strong sometimes, can't they?
Yeah. The time that this was initially painted was probably when our theme music was written.
That's a pretty good point. Well, the scary part I have is that they've been painting upstairs. I don't know how the people upstairs, that's Chad, Jane, Jennifer, Laura, are dealing with the paint fumes because they haven't even touched the downstairs area yet. So you and I, when we're hosting these shows and we've been smelling a lot of paint fumes, we could have some really, really interesting shows coming up here. So we'll have to see how that goes once they start painting our area.
Party.
Yeah, party time here on AM 950. Yeah, exactly. Hey, we got a guest on the line right now. That is Aaron Brown from Minnesota Brown. He covers northern Minnesota politics, especially up on the Iron Range. And, of course, never a dull moment on the Iron Range, as you guys have a special election in that area. It is Senate District 11 that had a special election triggered by Governor Tim Walz' decision to appoint DFL State Senator Tony Lowry as the Health and Human Services Commissioner. And we have that special election coming up on Tuesday, February 5th. But actually today we have a DFL primary to determine who is going to be the DFL nominee for Senate District 11. Hey, Aaron Brown, how you doing? Welcome to the program today.
Good. Glad to be here. I'm missing out on the paint fumes, but I'm still enjoying the show.
Yeah. You're not missing a whole lot with those. So I'd like you to tell us a little bit about Senate District 11, because I've done a little research on this, and it is a really interesting district because Tony Lowry was fairly easily reelected in 2016 by about 10 percentage points, but it's a district that Donald Trump won, and kind of the division between the 11B and the 11A portions of the district are very striking, between having them being very red in one area and very blue in one area. Tell us a little bit about Senate District 11.
Yeah, I like to point out that, of course, Senate District 11 is not part of the traditional Iron Range. It's actually an east central Minnesota. Most of it is Pine and Carlton counties. Those are the two main counties. There are small chunks of St. Louis and Kennebec counties in there as well. And as you point out, the 11A is to the north and 11B is to the south. And 11A, the Cloquet Carlton County district, broadly speaking, is the more DFL-leaning one. And then the 11B, the Pine County part of the district, is more conservative. And, of course, one has a DFL state rep, the other has a Republican state rep. And so as a district, as a Senate district, it's a pure swing district. It runs really close in statewide races. And as you pointed out, Trump carried it in 2016, and it was very, very close between all the statewide candidates this last election. So that's the drama as we enter this picture here, is that you have what had been a safe DFL seat because of a particularly strong DFL incumbent, Tony Lowry, who lives in that Pine County, in the southern part, the conservative part, and is, you know, part of a family that's really well known. In fact, his mother, Becky Lowry, held the seat before he did, and his son, Stu Lowry, is one of the candidates on the ballot today for the DFL primary. And so that's just some of the intrigue. But with the state rep, Jason Rarick, the Republican from the southern part of the district, is the Republican nominee, or will be the Republican nominee for this seat. And so you have a strong Republican candidate, and then two DFL candidates. We'll sort them out today. There's Stu Lowry and Michelle Lee, the news anchor from Duluth, who has lived in Moose Lake for the last several decades, and she is the DFL endorsed candidate. She just emerged with the endorsement this past weekend. So that's going to be, we'll watch tonight to see, and I'm not going to be dumb and make a prediction because it's such a weird January primary day after a snowstorm. I don't know who's going to vote. We'll find out. But that's a really interesting district. And I'd point out to listeners who don't know much about it, is I guarantee you've probably driven through this district. It's the one where Toby's is on the way north from the city to Duluth.
Yes. It's
so
the Toby's district.
Yeah. Most people in Minnesota have either eaten or used the bathroom in this district.
So I want to talk about this race between Michelle Lee and Stu Lowry, I should say. He's Tony Lowry's son, who's now running and trying to succeed his father, because it looked like initially Stu Lowry would be pretty much the overwhelming favorite to be the DFL nominee. Different labor organizations were endorsing him. Prominent DFLers were endorsing him. But as you said, Michelle Lee actually got the endorsement at the special Senate convention. How did this happen? Yeah. Does she have a better ground game than Stu Lowry, or what's going on up there to cause that?
Hard to say what the ground game is like. She had an inherent advantage in that when the delegates were elected in 2018, she was running for Congress, and she lost in the primary to Joe Radinovich in the 8th District, but she was very strong in her home counties and home Senate district, which is what this is. So she had a lot of delegate support built in just because she had a lot of people on the rolls. And they showed up and really gave her a clean win in the endorsement fight. It was a first ballot win for Michelle Lee. And as you mentioned, Stu Laurie has raised some money, and he's actually was up on TV running TV ads as Michelle Lee was winning the endorsement last weekend. So, you know, he's been touting the fact that he's outraised not only Michelle Lee, but his Republican opponent as well, and he was going to run a strong campaign. And as you point out, all the labor unions, at least most of the labor unions, went with him. But it is a low turnout election. Michelle Lee is a well-known figure. He's a well-known name, but Michelle Lee is well-known as well for her role as a 30-year news anchor, you know, for that area. And so it'll be a real interesting race where name recognition is relatively high for a low turnout election.
So switching gears and talking about the Republican, that's Jason Rarick, who's currently a state representative in, is it 11B where he's the representative right now?
Yeah, the southern part,
yeah.
Right.
So what do we know about him? Is he more of a Trump Republican? Is he an establishment Republican, a moderate? What's kind of been the general perception of him?
Well, he's a, by trade, he's literally by trade, he's an electrician. And in fact, he was endorsed by the IBEW, the Electricians Union, based on that fact alone. So he, I don't know if you would call him moderate. I think all Republicans in this climate are to some degree Trump Republicans. But he certainly has run at least friendlier with the unions. And that makes him a dangerous opponent, potentially, particularly if, like, let's just, you know, game this out. If Lee were to win the primary today, would all the unions go to her because she's the Democrat, or would some of the trade unions, the more moderate unions, look at the electrician Rarick? You know, I don't think so, but it's one of the complicating factors. And then what do the rank and file do, no matter what the unions do? You know, so there is some questions there. But on the other hand, should Stu Laurie win the primary, he is running against a Republican who is already starting. They already have a name for him. They're calling him Washington Stu because he was working in Washington, D.C. before this seat came open. He was working for Senator Tina Smith out in D.C., and he's got, of course, because of the family business, which is one part farming and two parts politics, you know, he had a lot of experience in political organizing. So there's the charge that he's a legacy candidate, that he's part of a political family, and he'll have to overcome that. So both candidates have some tricky footing once they come, well, whoever comes out of this primary. But it's a strong Republican, and there's a legal marijuana, you know, we wondered about what would happen when legal marijuana now got major party status. Well, we have our first example. We have a legal marijuana now candidate, Sparky Birnbach, running in this race. And while he's not favored, he's there on the ballot, and we don't know what that's going to mean either. So it's kind of a tricky, funny, interesting election, I think.
Do DFLers feel at all that they're at maybe a disadvantage for having this primary while Republicans already have their candidate? And on the DFL side, is there any concern that they'll not be unified after this election today?
The endorsing convention was remarkably civil. And the two candidates don't have a really strong ideological axe to grind against one another. It's kind of an identity politics kind of division. Michelle Lee is older. She's in her 60s, kind of represents the, you know, progressive baby boomer kind of model, got into politics later in life because of what was going on in the country, and so she kind of has that vibe, whereas Stu Laurie is younger and is kind of in the trenches with the DFL campaign workers and people who are active in politics, and so there's a little bit of a generation divide, perhaps, but I think the real question is who will vote, not just today, but in the general election on February 5th. You know, who gets, you know, who knows what the weather will be like then,
yeah.
and who gets out and votes. And so I think Democrats and Republicans both are going to have to run a turnout campaign. And they're predicting both, I mean, both parties, the Democrats, just DFL is already up with attack ads on Rarick right now. That's happening. And they're saying up to $2 million could be spent on this special election over the next 2 weeks, mostly in TV buys. So that's pretty crazy. It's crazy for a state Senate seat, especially one that won't flip the Senate one way or the other. But I think both parties want a mandate in the middle of the session. They don't want any negative press. They would like to say they won and that the people all support them. And so I think both parties are going to invest in trying to pull this one out.
And if you're wondering why we're talking about this special election so much, it will have a huge impact on the state Senate, because right now it's technically a two-seat majority for the Republicans. And if the GOP were to win this seat, it would go up to three seats. And if they were to lose, it would go down to one seat. And that's significant because one of the big issues that's going to come up in the legislature is gun reform. And while House DFLers do have some wiggle room having that big majority where they can maybe have some House DFLers that are from rural areas vote against gun reform, they really don't have that wiggle room in the Senate. And I know there's maybe some Republican suburban senators that might vote in favor of gun reform, but there also still are, even though they were largely purged this decade, some rural DFLers that are still in the state Senate. And among those are Tom Bach representing SD3, David Tomasoni in SD6, and we could have another one depending on what happens here in SD11. Are there any thoughts on what Bach and Tomasoni think about gun reform? We already saw Tom Bach kind of have some mixed feelings. What about Tomasoni and either of these two candidates that are running in CD?
Those are Tomasoni and Bach are the Iron Range senators. Mm-hmm. And of course, the other vaguely Iron Range Senate seat is District 5, which is represented by Republican Justin Eichhorn, who narrowly won his race back in 2016. So Tomasoni and Bach are not, they're going to be together on this, whatever ends up happening. The big factor is that Bach is the minority leader. He's the caucus leader. That is a really tricky, interesting thing, because I think a lot of Democrats have pushed for gun reform, and a lot of the people who were elected in the House this last election ran on that issue among them. That's one of the reasons they were successful in the suburbs. Well, the House can pass that, but if the caucus leader of the Democrats in the Senate essentially smothers the bill, it might not go through. I don't know where Stu Laurie or Michelle Lee are. I know Michelle Lee, when she ran for Congress, was strongly for gun reforms and probably would fall in that line if she were elected. Stu Laurie, I think, is pretty similar, though I can't speak for his because, you know, I know that because Michelle Lee ran for Congress on it, you know, a few months ago. I don't know where Stu Laurie is, but those rural Democrats do have to walk a line. I think we're past the days where they could seek the NRA endorsement or even want the NRA endorsement, but I think they would like to not be perceived as being gung-ho on too many gun regulations in the districts they represent. But we're watching the, you know, party, you know, people are sorting themselves into their parties, and the people who don't want gun reform typically are voting Republican. And it's just in the rural, and that's why Democrats have, one of the reasons Democrats have had such a hard time in these rural seats, as people bolt over not just guns, but over Trumpism, essentially. You know, it's getting harder for the DFL in rural Minnesota, and it will require, I think, some cultural and political change for that to change. You know, something's got to change for that trend to reverse itself. And I don't know what that is right now, but that's why this kind of seat is so tricky, you know. And the Lauries kind of represent this tradition of you know, of rural, they're the classic DFL, you know, farmer labor traditionalists, you know, literally with a farm, running on very progressive policies. And that's what this seat has been for the last couple decades. And we'll see how it holds up under the Kleegelites of a lot of spending and a lot of mailings and a lot of campaigning.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Unfortunately, Aaron Brown, we are out of time, but thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Aaron Brown. You can find his work over at Minnesota Brown. We'll be back for a few final thoughts here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hello, humans. This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio, and you are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
I'd love to hear more. Do you have a card?
This is it. This is when you can either let something happen or make it happen with your professional custom card from Vistaprint. Right now, you can get 500 business cards personalized the way you want them, starting at just $9.99. You pick the look, the style, and the statement you want to make in the moment. Now is the time to make something happen for your business. So own the now with 500 custom business cards starting at $9.99 at Vistaprint.com. Just use promo code 2323. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 2323.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is delighted to offer its spacious facilities for your private function. From weddings, retirement parties, business dinners, or any special occasion, Crooner's combines a dedicated full-service special events team, an award-winning chef, and a beautiful lakeside ambiance to make your event a resounding success. Visit croonersloungemn.com to learn more about their private dining options or call 763-571-9020 to get a quote for your next event today.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Yay, you survived the holidays. Now what about cleaning up that holiday mess? My friends, it's time you learn my holiday hangover secret. It's Zero Res. Fortunately for you, right now is the best time of the year to call Zero Res. Get three rooms clean starting at just $119. And this month only, get a hallway clean for free with their three-room special. Call 952-ZERO-RES or book online anytime at ZeroResMinnesota.com. Spell it backward or forward. It spells the same. Zero Res.
This is Jennifer Ogren, account executive at AM 950, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hey, back here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Unfortunately, apologize there, Jody. We just ran too long there with Aaron Browns, but did see your note there. You're on your way to vote in Pine County, which I believe is in SD11, so definitely glad to hear that. Hey, by the way, one more quick reminder. Blue State Ball tickets are on sale now. Order those at am950radio.com. That is am950radio.com. Going to be a great time out there. We have Tom Hartman as our headliner, and we just confirmed that It's Greek to Me is going to be doing the catering, so really looking forward to that. Hey, I'm glad you could join us here for 2 hours of the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Alan Miller's in tomorrow for Matt McNeil. I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.